This man is the most unnatural shade of orange. Made me cough.
Welcome to Lawyers Behaving Badly. I am Jennifer Judge.
And I'm Karen Delaney. I'm sorry, I can hear your dog chewing her food in the background, and I just can't keep it together.
That's how professional we are.
I was going to say, we've been gone for 2 weeks.
I was literally just like, literally she hasn't eaten in a day, and now she was like, now's the time to nom 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 on dog food, so I'm just going to go pick that up real quick. Anyway, welcome to the podcast, everyone.
You're back. And you've got your office walls painted. You are back in your renovated office.
Yes, I am. And it's so nice to be back in my office. Although I don't have like half the stuff I need, like half the furniture is not in here. So now it's like a big echoey box, but It's getting better. Like the first day when it was literally just my desk in this room, I got on a call and I had like my little conference call thing and I said a word and it echoed like 6 different times in here. And I was like, oh, that's bad. So
yeah.
I need to figure out, I'm like shoving soft sided things in here to keep it from echoing as badly when I'm on calls or recording podcasts.
Yeah. I was going to say, okay, so you've got your dog eating her food.
Yes.
We've got the echoey walls. We're off to just an incredible start here.
We are. Welcome back, everyone. How are you doing, friend?
Well, I just almost ran over a jogger about 10 minutes ago. So
on purpose or accidentally?
No, believe it or not, I try not to hit people. No, I had just dropped my first grader off at his elementary school, and I was coming out of the neighborhood to the main road so I could go drop my younger guy off at pre-K. The way this little exit to the neighborhood works is, you know, to the right, there's like a brick wall and the neighborhood is maybe 4 houses deep there. And then on the other side of that is like a gigantic field that is vacant at this point. Like they're trying to sell it for retail, but it's just an empty field. Like there's not even a sidewalk there. To the left, you know, is obviously oncoming traffic and like the rest of the neighborhood. And so I glanced right and then I was looking left, waiting for oncoming traffic to break so that I could turn right. You know, there was a break in the traffic. I took my foot off the brake and started moving the car forward. And there's a man in front of my car.
Oh, God, just that's like the scariest.
Out of nowhere, I slammed on the brake. It was like, Jesus Christ. But the craziest part about this is that guy didn't even... Like, I'm not even sure he knows that he almost got turned into a pancake this morning. Like, he wasn't looking at the car. He didn't react. I have no idea where this guy came from. I think he must have come from behind me in the neighborhood and then
like turned in front of you,
crossed in front of the car. And I am not a jogger. Let's be very clear here. I don't run. Ew, gross. But I am a frequent hot girl walker.
Yeah.
And you cannot get me to step out in front of a car.
No, I always like walk behind the car that's currently turning.
Yeah, like walk behind, or if I'm going to go in front of them, I always wait until we have made eye contact and the driver has acknowledged me. Because people are crazy and they don't pay attention. And clearly I should have looked right again. But it, I mean, honestly, never occurred to me anybody would be coming from that direction because you have that big empty field there with no sidewalk. But yeah, so there is somebody out there who is
had a near-death experience and doesn't even know it.
And has no idea, yeah. And then I was just so, like, taken aback by the whole thing. I almost missed my turn for where I was supposed to go. Yes. Take my my
like, your adrenaline is pumping and you're like, ugh.
I know. And so I was going to make myself a little iced matcha latte before we hopped on because it's 8 o'clock in the morning right now. And I decided that wasn't necessary. I'm awake.
I am working on nature's caffeine.
I know. So yeah, that was the drama this morning. And then otherwise, how am I not doing? The fourth quarter is always just completely crazy. And I kind of just have to white knuckle my way through it because we have, I mean, on top of running a business and trying to be gainfully employed and caring for a family and maintaining a house and all that kind of stuff. Both my kids have their birthdays in the fourth quarter. We've got Halloween, Thanksgiving, Christmas. My parents are divorced. My husband's parents are divorced. None of those people live in the same city.
Yes.
It is just a really crazy time. And I realized recently, because I think it's hard to talk about these things and like the mental load and how exhausting and draining it can be without people being like, well, you're just a Grinch and you have a bad attitude or whatever. And like, where's the holiday joy? And it's like, what? Are you responsible for the holiday joy? Because it turns out the holiday joy is like a lot of fucking work.
It doesn't happen magically. It's somebody's providing you that holiday joy.
Right, right. Yeah. Like that holiday joy is in a bunch of like Rubbermaid bins up in the attic waiting for somebody to get it down. But it occurred to me the other issue for me is that this is just a quarter where like once every 3 or 4 weeks, there's something that requires a lot of like executive functioning, a lot of planning ahead and planning. I mean, different elements of the planning that have to happen at different times. I mean, like think about a birthday party and we can make it simpler. Like we could just go to a park. We could do something at the house, but like we right now do like bigger stuff for the kids. And so you got to book the venue and you got to get the presents and you got to order like the decorations and you got to get the invitation done and get that out and track the RSVPs and all that kind of stuff. And so I realized that I think really what it is like there's a huge mental load, there's a large workload. But for me, as somebody whose brain survives on urgency and immediacy, having to plan for things that are not immediate constantly for like 4 months, because let's be honest, like this basically started last month, is completely, utterly exhausting. And my brain hates it. My brain is just like, why are you making me do this? So yeah, it's just a really crazy time.
We're hosting Thanksgiving at our place for both sides of our family for various reasons this year. And it's going to be about 20 people that we're hosting. And my mom the other day was like, well, what's the plan? Tell me what you're working on. Like, what can we do? And I was like, oh, like you need to check back the weekend before Thanksgiving because it, like there is no plan there. I'm sure there will be one. And thank God a couple of years ago, what I started doing was just creating Google Sheets of all the recipes and everything that I put in one place. And so I can just basically reuse that to do that every year with all the ingredients and all the shopping, and we tweak it here and there. But thank God for Pass Me, because otherwise it would be the weekend before that I'm just like absolutely scrambling and basically paying double for delivery grocery orders, which I will do in a heartbeat to make life simpler.
Of course.
So same thing. And I've talked about before, like every week from now until Christmas, my husband or I are traveling.
Yes, that's
and so it,
like in this time of the year, that is
crazy. In this time of the year, it's insane. Like the kids have sports every weekend, you know, every Saturday night they have like football games and then basketball starts up. And so like just thinking about everything that we have coming and then people are like, we should do X together. And I'm like, I don't know when. So, you know, it's like the anxiety starts ratcheting up as I start thinking about this time of year. And like, it's the most wonderful time of the year for some people.
Somebody medicate me for the love of fucking God. And we're back. We had a little technical challenge.
a little technical difficulties on top of everything else today.
I know. I was going to say, we're not the only ones who are suffering. Our computers are like, please, for the love of God, just give us a break. So on that note, what's up? How are you? I feel like I haven't talked to you in forever.
I know. I was thinking about it last night. I was like, it's so funny that we text basically literally all day, every day. But at the same time, I'm like, I feel like I haven't talked to you in forever.
I know. Where have you been, friend?
I'm good. I spent last week out of town for work. And you know, that is just absolutely exhausting because it's up and at the office by 7:30. And then you work all day in meetings. And then you have dinner out with everybody. So by the time you get to your hotel room at like 9:30, you basically just crash. So that was a lot. And then, you know, my flight was canceled on the way home on Thursday night. So I ended up having to stay an extra night. And like I had a cold that my son had very nicely given me at the time. And I took a picture. I didn't send it to you, but I sent it to my sister. Like I also was having some sort of allergy attack where I was. Mm-hmm. And so my eyes were absolutely bright red all around them. Like it looked like I had pink eye. And so I was like, they may not let me board the plane. So I had to like buy Zyrtec at the hotel and take it. And that helped a little bit, thank God. But it was one of those where you're just like, I just want to be home. So yeah. Like we did not do much this weekend. The kids had, you know, flag football games, and then Sunday we basically did nothing and like tried to like, it was, you know, rat time wrapped in my blanket on the couch, like doing absolutely nothing. It was wonderful. So we've been doing that. Now my husband's out of town, luckily for a short trip. So we're handling that. And then, you know, it's just kids and sports and work, and it's all just a blur. Like this, like we're going to be triaging this quarter through survival, basically, is what we're doing.
Yeah. Survival quarter over here.
Yeah. That's my youngest the other day was like, when can I have my friends over for a sleepover? And I was like, maybe November-ish.
That would make me feel like the Tin Man from The Wizard of Oz in like a bolt popping loose and just like the whole thing collapsing into a pile of parts.
Yes.
Please don't ask me to plan anything else. I literally can't handle it.
It is. And it, at the same time, like, God bless him. You know what I've done with my kids before is like every now and then I'll take them one-on-one on some little like short weekend trip so we could just spend quality time together. And so my youngest last night was like, well, you know, last year you promised that this fall we'd do our one-on-one trip together. And it literally was like my brain short-circuited. And I was like, yeah, that's not happening. Like, we'll look at something in the spring, but there is just literally no way that we can make that happen this fall. And of course he was upset. So we had to like plan something for the spring and get it figured out. But I was just like, there is literally no way that we can make that happen this fall.
You're like, maybe you'll grow up to be a children's author and you'll write a book called Mommy Lies.
Yeah. Every now and then he is like, why did you lie to me? And it's stuff like, you know, can you play, you know, video games on Saturday? And I'm like, maybe, buddy. And he turns that into, you always lie to me. And I'm like, oh my God, his therapy bills are going to be astronomical.
Doing our part to keep psychologists and therapists in business in 20 years.
Exactly. But yeah, so that's how we're doing. It's all a blur and it's fun. We're lucky, you know, it's everything's great, but it's just stressful and tiring.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, we in the 2 weeks that we disappeared, our friend Ken Paxton had quite the time, or he didn't because he just didn't show up to his impeachment trial.
I was about to say he really did have quite the time because we heard he was getting like massages at Barton Creek. Yeah, so like, during the trial.
Yeah. Must be nice.
Yeah, exactly. As all defendants do during their trial.
Yeah.
Yeah, it was, I think it was exactly kind of what we predicted, which was it broke down into party lines. And, you know, we had the Paxton trial. I know you and I have a lot of thoughts on that. I think I counted we were in also 4 separate group chats about it. So there were texts flying at any point in time as we watched it. You know, I watched a lot of the first week and I know you watched more of the second week. So we were kind of able to cover the first and the second. And my notes, I was so angry by the end of it. Spoiler alert for those who didn't follow it or may not know or live under a rock, he was acquitted. So in only 2 Republicans of the, you know, I think 12 that they needed actually voted to convict him. The rest voted to acquit him. And of the 2 that voted to convict him, both of them just got new territories that were just gerrymandered. So they have 4-year terms as opposed to 2-year terms. So they figure they can basically wait out the inevitable primary challenge.
Yeah, they are not up for re-election until 2026.
Mm-hmm.
Every other Republican that could have voted to hold him accountable is up for re-election next year.
Yes. And this isn't like some theoretical, oh, they may be primaried out if they vote for him. Like there were billionaires in Texas saying, we will primary you and ensure that you have primary challengers if you vote for him. So, I mean, it broke down exactly like we thought it would. It was a power play, pure politics. It was the Dan Patrick show from beginning to end. He's, again, the lieutenant governor of the state of Texas and kind of the head of the Senate and quote unquote judge of I know. This I mean, I hate farce that, like, of a trial.
I hate that we are calling this a trial because mm-hmm. it's not. It's a political proceeding. Dan Patrick was a radio show host. At no time has he ever been to law school or a practicing yes. lawyer. He certainly has not been a judge in any capacity no. whatsoever. And he had the advice of, I guess, some lawyer or judge. But my understanding was he wasn't like particularly leaning on that advice. He was just no. sort of like skating along on vibes alone.
It was purely vibes alone. And it was insane to watch these advocates, and more on the advocates later.
Oh, God.
It was insane to watch these advocates, you know, basically everything was a speaking objection, like insane speaking objections that would never fly in a real court to begin with. And then he would just decide on vibes. And half the time the objections weren't even correct. You know, they would object to hearsay for statements that just emphatically were not hearsay. And he would sustain that or over, you know, it was 100% based on vibes. Basically, it was him with his finger on the scale the entire time, ensuring that it broke the way he wanted it to.
Well, let's talk about the attorneys, because yes. I have never been so utterly unimpressed.
Absolutely
in
underwhelmed.
My entire life. Mm-hmm. And all I've been hearing since they impeached Ken Paxton and the House hired Rusty Hardin and Dick DeGaron to represent them, and mm-hmm. Paxton hired Tony Busby, who is known as a Republican in the Houston area who for a long time, I guess, had a tank sitting in his front yard.
Yes. Yes. Mm-hmm.
Of course, everybody is like an octogenarian white guy.
Mm-hmm.
And I've heard so much since Paxton was impeached about how these are lions of the trial bar and some of the best trial lawyers in Texas. I was thinking back to something kind of unrelated that my husband and I had been talking about, which was he had been listening to a book about a history of baseball and just about the discrimination and exclusion historically mm-hmm. in the MLB, and the fact that Black players weren't allowed in the league and you weren't competing against people from Puerto Rico or anywhere else. And it's like, are the baseball players that we think of as the greats, like Babe Ruth or Joe DiMaggio, like, were they really that great? Because they weren't actually competing against a full and fair mm-hmm. field, mm-hmm. you know? And when you look at the practice of law and you look at how abysmal diversity is, not only in partnership ranks, but in equity partner ranks, and how non-diverse typically like the bench is, you just kind of wonder, like, and especially with the performance that we saw yes. over the last 2 weeks, like, what do you mean these are the trial? Like, what the fuck? What yeah, the fuck?
That was the biggest takeaway that you and I know you and I have talked about it, you know, ad nauseum already with each other, but is how wildly low the bar must have been for these men to be considered lions of the Texas
yes.
bar and the best trial lawyers in the state. And granted, they are old as fuck, so maybe they've lost a step. I will give them that. But even if they've lost a step, I was
where did we
so
start from? Like, where are we losing a step from?
Incredibly underwhelmed.
Yeah.
Yes, exactly. And any third-year female law student who's mildly capable in the courtroom could have wiped the court with them. I don't know
what her name was, but we did finally see a female attorney for the House manager's side
mm-hmm.
who examined some witnesses, and she yes. was excellent. And it was like,
yes.
where has she been this whole time?
Wasn't that a breath of fresh air? It was like,
I know.
It was like the entire proceedings had like revived themselves because there was someone competent doing witness examinations. It was insane.
So I did put together a couple of lists. I meant to do more of this, but I put together a couple of lists before we recorded. One is my top five moments of the Ken Paxton trial, and there are only four things on it. So number one, when Paxton's attorney, Tony Busby, objected to his own evidence, and there was yes. like a long argument about it, and the House manager attorney was like, what do you mean he's objecting? Like, they submitted this evidence. This is their evidence. It's already been admitted. What the fuck?
And then he objected based on privilege, too. That yeah. was my favorite part.
Tony Busby, if you guys who are listening, if you did not watch any of this, please, 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 my God, please, I'm begging you, go Google a picture of Tony Busby. It's B-U-Z-B-E-E. This man is the most unnatural shade of orange.
Made me cough. The memes I saw of people comparing him to like wood stain colors.
Yeah, because like I occasionally have gotten a little over aggressive with the self tanner, yes, but like this, I don't understand like what you have to do to get this color. So my second top five moment of the Ken Paxton trial is when Paxton's attorney, Tony Busby, posted on his Instagram that media outlets were doctoring pictures of him to make him look oranger than he really is.
And I mean, if we watched, like you and I watched the live feed, they weren't doctoring it. Like there's no way they have. And like, he is so orange that Donald Trump would be like, bro, like literally he like glows. He's so orange.
It is perplexing. And the thing is that it is so jarring because the moment the live feed started and he was shown on camera, everybody on text blew up like, what the fuck is orange? Why is he so orange?
I thought the color contrast was off on my monitor when it came up. Because I was like, no, that can't be accurate.
I know, it's like tap, 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 tap. Like, what's wrong with this thing? No, that's just his color. My third top moment is when House manager attorney Rusty Hardin rested the House's case against Paxton on accident.
Yes, that was pretty classic.
Yeah. So going back again, just to the quality of the lawyering, and you know, we get a lot of feedback on this podcast about how we make you all feel better about imposter syndrome and realizing that, you know, girl, you're doing a good job. You're doing a good job. And
you did a good job.
Did a good job. I'm here to tell you that if you are a trial lawyer and you have never accidentally rested your case, that you're doing a good job.
You're fine. You're doing great. You accidentally rested your case in the middle of a witness examination. Like, we should.
And then my last of my top five moments that are really four is when Dan Patrick had claimed to do his best to be a neutral judge and fair to both parties, despite the fact that Ken Paxton owes him six figures in debt and Dan Patrick is a beneficiary of Paxton's PAC in the millions of dollars.
$3 million, by the way.
Right, $3 million that Dan Patrick got from this PAC. So when Dan Patrick claimed to be a neutral judge, but then as soon as Paxton was acquitted, like literally within moments, he launches into this vitriolic screed about how this was a scam. Oh, and hashtag scampeachment started trending on GOP Twitter, and how he was going to order like an investigation. He wanted to amend the Constitution of the state of Texas to make impeachment harder because this never should have happened. And he is going to order. And in fact, he did, I think yesterday, the day before, ordered an audit of all costs in the House of this impeachment. And you know what they're doing is like, they're going to try and turn that into a commercial to run against, number one, the two Republicans that voted to convict Paxton, but you know, all the Democrats and then everybody in the House who voted for this, like that's what they're going to do with this. So it's like, okay, I agree this was a scam, although we have a difference of opinion about why. And it's like, okay, this is refreshing that we're going to drop the veneer.
Yeah, no, I think that's exactly right. And it is depressing. Like I was in a funk all day Saturday when, like, we knew what the verdict was going to be. I knew what the verdict was going to be. But I was in a funk because he's just, now Paxton is emboldened. He has the power of the state behind him. He is the chosen one now who survived this impeachment attempt. And who knows how unhinged he's going to be. Because the closing arguments that Tony Busby made were very clear that this is all the rhinos in the Texas House who aren't Republicans really, and they're out to get him because they're not conservative enough and they're not right-wing enough. And my other favorite thing was somehow this was all a conspiracy by George P. Bush to take down Ken Paxton.
He's like George W. Bush's grandson or nephew or who?
Nephew.
Okay. Yeah. Well, and there was also a whole, there was a whole bunch of stuff about this is the end of the Bush family era in Texas. It's like, yes. Do you have any idea what a right wing nut job you have to be to be like, oh, the Bushes, those fucking liberals?
Yeah, exactly. Yes. And so just buckle up because it's going to get so much worse.
Well, yeah. And I mean, you said Paxton's going to be unhinged, but my overall takeaway is if you think Texas was an unhinged shithole to begin with, which check done. Yes, I do.
Yes.
Buckle up because I don't think it's just Paxton. I mean, the very clear message takeaway from this for any Republican in Texas should be do whatever the fuck you want. As long as you toe the party line, we don't care if you're taking bribes. We don't care if you're interfering in law enforcement investigations or pulling favors for your friends. We don't care what you do. As long as you're going to vote the way that we want you to vote, we don't care. And so
the outcome justifies everything else for them at this point.
Yeah. So I have to think that it's really just wheels off in general from here.
Yes.
And that doesn't make me feel good.
No, it doesn't. I mean, when the Wall Street Journal's op-ed page and editorial is coming out saying that this was a sham and the fix was in from the very beginning, like when you've lost the Wall Street Journal's editorial page, like that's pretty bad, guys.
You mean the Sam Alito fan club?
Yeah, exactly.
The other thing I did, I said I made two lists. So one was my top five moments. The other was a list of things that might make Tony Busby faint, like a Victorian child. Yeah. But I've only got two things on it. Number one, a woman making eye contact with him. And number two, sunscreen. I didn't get any further.
Exfoliator. Yeah, it was a hot mess. It was like, it was depressing to watch. There was some young upstart attorney too that was on Paxton's defense as well, who was possibly the most hateable attorney that I have ever seen as a trial advocate. And he graduated law school like 2.5 or 3 years ago. But the way he objected and carried himself, it was like out of central casting as like the most obnoxious opposing counsel you've ever had. And he kept objecting to the witnesses saying that they were providing, you know, their opinions. And he was like, objection, Your Honor, that's a very detrimental opinion. I'm like, oh, shit. Yeah, exactly.
That witness is saying bad stuff and I don't like it. Well, I look forward to him being our governor in 5 years.
Yeah, that's exactly right. When Paxton becomes our governor, he'll become our attorney general. Oh my God, and Jesus Christ. We'll know his name.
State.
So on that happy note, that was the Paxton trial.
Yay!
I can't wait for our main topic today because I have, like a goldfish, already forgotten what it is. So it's going to be a big surprise to me.
Well, I'm a little nervous. This is risky because we've been gone for 2 weeks. And I think the three episodes before we were gone were all about Paxton. Mm-hmm. And this episode
is the littler one after that.
Oh, that's right. I think.
Yeah.
I can't remember because it's been too long. And I also am a goldfish. But anyway, this story is not actually about a lawyer behaving badly. This came to my attention because it was an order out of several orders out of the Seventh Circuit Court of Appeals. And I thought it was hilarious.
Yes.
And it also has a pretty satisfying conclusion. And I wanted to share it with you because I was cracking myself up writing the script because I was like, I can't wait to see what she has to say about this. This story all starts at a salon and spa in Wisconsin that I will call Sanctuary Spa. Mm-hmm. Sanctuary Salon and Spa is owned by husband and wife super duo, Jim Bobberson and Kay Bobberson. Jim is the most involved in day-to-day management. Sanctuary offers a variety of services like hairstyling, lash extensions, massage, waxing, facials, nails. In 2020, they had about 30 to 40 employees between two locations, and they are branded as an Aveda salon. And I will say that although I love Aveda products, I had one of the worst haircuts of my life at an Aveda salon by my old house, and I have been forever scarred by that experience.
Yeah, I'm wildly underwhelmed by Aveda salons as well. I went to one for a little bit too.
Yeah, I think the quality of the products does not have any bearing on the quality of the services in those salons. It's just marketing. I looked up some Yelp reviews because naturally I was curious.
I was going to say, and nosy as hell.
And I, to be fair, I have to say that there are a lot of really good reviews, but, you know, I didn't scrutinize them to see, like, is this the only review that this person has ever written? But there are also a few that give me pause, like, last year, a reviewer said she went to get her nails done, but they don't actually have nail techs there. They just have hairstylists who can also do nails, which is a hell to the no for me.
Yes.
And she's like, my nails look like I did them at home. And it's like, well, yeah, girl, because you basically just had like a friend do it.
Yeah, exactly.
Another reviewer says, this was the worst hair experience of my life. I needed a full head of highlights and a cut. The descriptive words I used were blended and natural. The stylist did not use a fine weave technique, but instead put in the color in chunky slices.
Oh no, she had tiger stripe hair.
I know. She said, my natural hair is brown and the highlights that were put in was a white blonde. And she said her hair hadn't been cut in a while. And so on top of the color, she needed like a cut and she wanted layers. And she's like, the cut was also done incorrectly. So it looks like I have a short haircut on top and a completely different length underneath. Somehow the stylist took off half the length of my hair while trying to add in layers. The cut is so butchered to the point where the shortest layers start at my jaw. There's no way I can hide the damage.
Oh no.
Another reviewer says that she went to get her face waxed, and first they tried to post her up at the shampoo station, like I guess laying back with your head in the shampoo bowl to get your whiskers ripped off in front of everybody else in the salon.
Oh my God.
Which also seems like an extremely uncomfortable way to get waxed. And she was like, is there like a private room or something? So they do take her back to a private room. But then she says the waxing person left the wax on too long. And 7 days later, she still has a rash on her face.
Oh my God.
Interestingly, you know, I mentioned that this is run by husband and wife team, Jim and Kay Bobberson. There are a couple of reviews by Jim B and KB.
No way.
Crowing about how wonderful Sanctuary is. And just to preview for you where we're going today, one of KB's reviews from April 2021 reads, you only get one chance to make a first impression, and this salon knocked it out of the park. I made an appointment for a mani-pedi based on a recommendation from my sister who lives in the area and could not be more happy with the service or the genuinely nice people who work here. I arrived, all caps, not wearing a mask. And was all caps very pleased to see that others not wearing masks. This is a sentence that's in all caps. Your health, your choice.
Oh, shut up.
This business hit a home run, allowing clients to make their own health choices. The salon is spotless. No dust or hair on the floor or the retail shelves. While waiting for service, I observed tons of cleaning going on with an emphasis on high traffic touch points. It's like, yes, this definitely sounds like it was written by a customer.
This is always in the reviews I leave for establishments.
I observed the high traffic touch points and examined the dust on the retail shelves. The slat wall appeared to be properly installed.
The point of sale system seemed to be thorough and easy to use.
I observed that they appear to be using end-to-end encryption. So that's Sanctuary Spa with a taste of Jim Bobberson and Kay Bobberson. And now we're going to meet Emily. Emily works at Sanctuary Salon and Spa. The spa has two locations near each other, and she started working at the spa in October 2014. And she has a brief stint somewhere else where she was a contractor, I guess, and then she comes back to the spa. She was a guest concierge at the spa, and she worked at both locations, which means she was responsible for opening and closing the salon, balancing the cash drawer, making sure stations were supplied, preparing the beverage station, checking in guests, scheduling appointments, selling products, answering phones. And then in February 2020, Jim promotes her to the position of communications lead, but she's also still got all of her guest concierge work. And so as communications lead, she is supposed to create a customer newsletter, an employee newsletter, and do social media posts. So that's February 2020. That all seems great. What also was brewing in February 2020, friend?
Oh, was that? That's like the start of COVID.
Yeah. Yeah. And then in March, all of our lives ground to a halt. And suddenly we were all at home trying to figure out if we needed to spray down our Amazon packages with Lysol. Yes. And up in Wisconsin, Sanctuary shut down both of its spas in response to a statewide shutdown order. A few months passed and the spas were supposed to reopen on May 26th. Jim Bobberson emailed the spa's employees and told them what he and Kay Bobberson had decided about safety measures in the spa. Now, according to the NLRB, the National Labor Relations Board, the Bobbersons purchased 2 masks for each employee. Which, I mean, like, it's one thing if you can't get masks. Yeah. It was, like, dicey getting masks at one point, although I think by this point we probably had some. But in any event, it's one thing if you can't get masks, but it's another if you're like, here's your 2 masks.
Exactly.
The Bobbersons hired a call center to take appointments so that front desk staff could focus on sanitation and cleaning. And Jim said in his email to the staff there that Sanctuary intended to implement a touchless check-in and payment system. And I guess at this point, they must not have had a credit card machine that you could run your card through yourself as a customer. You like had to hand your card over to the person working the front desk. Jim's email did say that the salon would not be installing plexi barriers recommended by the CDC because they felt that that took away from the spa-like experience. And they also were not going to have a uniform mask policy. So they were not going to require guests to wear masks at all. Mm-hmm. As for the staff, aestheticians were required to wear masks. So the person who's doing your facial...
Yeah, all up in your face.
But none of the other employees were.
Okay.
Which makes my skin crawl and I feel dirty and germy and like I need a shower, just like all those people open mouth breathing. Because what is the appreciable difference between an aesthetician who's bent over your face or like the hairstylist standing directly over you,
cutting your bangs. Hair. Yeah, exactly.
Mm-hmm. Or like washing your hair in a bowl or like a nail tech who's giving you a manicure from a foot away. Like that makes no sense. There's no difference. There's no difference. But as the spa is getting ready to reopen, something happens in the interim. The Wisconsin Supreme Court reverses the state's stay-at-home order on May 13th.
Okay.
Immediately, Jim Bobberson sends an email to all employees saying, well, instead of opening on May 26th, we're going to open on May 18th, which is a few days later. And Emily gets this email, and we don't really have any details, but the NLRB says she researched what other Aveda salons nearby were doing for safety measures. And she emails Jim Bobberson and attaches a document where she details the safety protocols at the other salon nearby. And she says in this email, like, I'm worried about everybody's safety. I'm worried about the safety of employees' families because we're working with the public and then we're going home to our own families and our kids. And she says she'll wear a mask when she returns to work and she hopes that guests will too. And Jim responds and tells her that mask wearing was a quote-unquote touchy subject, but he and Kay Bobberson wouldn't reopen the spa if they thought there were any serious risks.
Oh, yeah. All the risk was gone by May.
Yeah, May 2020. Like, we're good. It's fine. Yeah. Like, nobody's filling up hospitals.
No one
dying.
Died since then.
I know. There aren't, like, 18-wheelers full of dead bodies in New York. Don't worry about it.
Yeah.
So if you're Emily here, you've kind of got to ask yourself, like, do you trust the risk assessment of 2 people who decided that only aestheticians need to wear masks, but nobody else does?
Like, no.
Before this May 18th reopening, Jim asks Emily and two other employees to come to the spa to get it ready for reopening. And while Emily is there, she gets talking to these other employees, and they're basically looking around, and they're like, I mean, he's put together this protocol of, you know, between every customer, you need to sanitize the shampoo bowl, you need to wipe down the chair and mm-hmm. wipe down the counters. But they're looking at the cleaning and sanitizing supplies, and they're like, we don't have enough to do that. Like, there's just not enough here. And then also, what the fuck is this mask policy? Sanctuary reopens, and there's immediately a problem, which is, as expected, Emily notices they don't have enough cleaning and sanitizing supplies. Mm-hmm. And this was a problem early on in the pandemic. Like, it was hard to mm-hmm. find bleach. It was hard to find sanitizing wipes or Lysol. And so, I mean, as a business, you've got a choice. You can either put your money where your mouth is and decide you're not going to operate if you cannot clean and provide an appropriately safe environment for your employees mm-hmm. and your customers. Or you're just like, fuck it, whatever. Like, okay.
Or it's YOLO.
Yeah, YOLO. Mm-hmm. So what do you think the Bobbersons decided to do?
Oh, yeah. They were like, damn the torpedoes. Let's go. We're going full steam ahead.
Yeah, it's just like business as usual. There mm-hmm. are a whole lot of people just completely unmasked in the spa. Even though estheticians were supposed to be wearing masks, nobody enforced that policy.
I'm shocked by that.
Yeah. So like the people who are wearing masks, who knows? They might, mm-hmm. they might not. It's sort of like personal preference. Emily has a friend at Sanctuary who is an esthetician herself. And this esthetician and Emily were really worried about this mask policy because they are both divorced. They have kids who go between their homes and their ex-husband's homes. Mm-hmm. So they're worried, like everybody here is worried that Emily and this esthetician are going to get exposed to COVID-19 at work and bring it back to the kids. And it's been a few years. So, I mean, I don't want to lose sight of how completely gut-wrenching this time was, because mm-hmm. I know we were having conversations about, what do we do if one of us is hospitalized? What do we do yep. if both of us are hospitalized? Like, we don't have family in town who can take care of our kids, and everybody's locked down and like social distancing. Who are we going to call to take our kids? And yep. what happens if we both die and the kids are orphaned? I mean, these are like some really grim conversations, none of which had good answers.
No. Yes. I distinctly remember having those conversations too.
Yes. And so like us, Emily and the esthetician are worried about all of this. And this esthetician was so worried about this when Sanctuary reopened, she didn't see her own kids for weeks because she was so worried about getting exposed at work. A few weeks after reopening, Emily talked to Jim Bobberson and she tells him, you know, we need more hand sanitizer. We need more rubbing alcohol. And mm-hmm. I'm guessing they were using rubbing alcohol because at one point it was like easier to get that than it was like cleaning Lysol. Supplies.
Yeah.
Yeah. Also, apparently the credit card readers that were part of this promised contactless payment system weren't working.
Of course not.
So that fell through and she's like, hey, can we get that fixed? She also raised the issue of like, you've got guests coming in here who are not masking and nobody knows what to do. Like, do we offer them a mask or is that going to offend people? Like, are we allowed to do that? And ultimately she talks to Jim a few times, raising these issues and raising, they don't have social distancing signage or markers on the floor about where you're supposed to stand to keep 6 feet apart. Jim doesn't do anything. Doesn't fix the credit card machines, doesn't install social distancing signage, doesn't install Plexi. And I gather that the cleaning supplies issue persists. Mm-hmm. Then in July 2020, one day, Emily gets to work and she notices one of the hairstylists isn't there who is supposed to be there. She asks around and she finds out from a coworker that hairstylist is off work because she is getting tested because she's been exposed to COVID. Jim is at the salon that day and Emily's like, hey, are you going to tell us if she tests positive? Mm-hmm. And Jim's like, yeah, but like, you don't need to worry about it. And Emily and her esthetician friend both worked with this hairstylist earlier in the week, so they are understandably alarmed. And other employees who had been in close contact with the hairstylist had no idea that she had been exposed or that she was getting tested. This same day, Jim sends an all-employee email saying, surprise, she tested positive. But his email also says, well, we determined that the employee was not at Sanctuary or in contact with any of you between the time of exposure and now. And I guess the story is basically, like, this is a Thursday. Mm-hmm. And I guess the story is basically, like, she was exposed to somebody with COVID on Wednesday night, and she tests positive on Thursday. That's not how Thursday. It works.
Yeah.
Bingo.
Yeah. And I just to add something here, because you and I were working during this time period, so you know as well as I do, like, during that time period, too, you were required to notify employees, you know, based on various state laws and the CDC recommendations. And I think there were, I can't remember, it's all such a blur, but like, if someone tested positive, you were required to tell your employees and contact traced with them and let them know if they were potentially exposed. Like, this wasn't just a, oh, it's a nice thing to do. This was a legal obligation at that point in time.
Yeah, it's also a blur for me, but
yeah,
I will remind people I was in retail when COVID started.
Yes.
It was crazy. That's all I'm going to say about that. So yeah, that's the story is, well, she was exposed Wednesday night. She tests positive on Thursday. Nobody from Sanctuary was with her on Wednesday night and Thursday when she took she took off work. So it's fine. His email to all employees says nothing about whether anybody else should go get tested, mm-hmm. whether they were going to notify guests, whether they are going to shut down the spa and do any special cleaning or sanitizing. Because that was also a common practice at the time where if you mm-hmm. had an employee who tested positive for COVID, you closed the business.
Yep.
And you sanitized as an attempt to like try and make it safer yes. for employees to return to work. And there's nothing in this email that indicates that they're going to take any additional steps. It's just like FYI. Emily doesn't see this email when it initially goes out. She is driving to her ex-husband's house to pick up her kids when she gets a text from her esthetician friend that's like, have you seen this fucking bullshit from Jim?
Have you seen this shit? Yeah.
And the esthetician is pissed because she feels like it was insulting that Jim expected them to believe that this employee could have been exposed one night and yes. tested positive the very next day. Yes. She's like, that's not how it works. And she basically concludes, like, we're being lied to. So Emily literally parks in the driveway of her ex's house to read Jim's email before she goes inside. Mm-hmm. And as she's sitting in her car in the driveway of her ex-husband's house, she calls her doctor and her ex-husband's sister, who is a doctor, to frantically try and figure out, is it safe for me to go inside and pick up my kids and bring them back home? Like, sitting mm-hmm. in the driveway trying to figure this shit out. Mm-hmm. Honestly, the most astonishing part of this story to me is that she evidently manages to immediately get a hold of both her doctor and the ex-sister-in-law.
No, that's not how it works either.
I was like, this doctor must be amazing.
Yes.
Anyway, both her doctor and her ex-sister-in-law have the same reaction that you and I do, which was like, that's not possible.
Yeah.
Like, this person had to have been infected and contagious at least 3 days before that positive test, which meant, yes, she was at the salon working with all mm-hmm. of you while she was contagious. And of course, Emily and her esthetician friend and a number of other employees had been working with her. So now we've got a whole bunch of people who are potentially exposed. And Emily and her esthetician friend are understandably alarmed because, again, they're like, well, Jim's obviously a liar. And how can we feel safe going into work like this? The esthetician emails Jim and is like, well, I worked with that hairstylist, so I need time off tomorrow to go get tested so I know whether it's safe to pick up my kids after the weekend, because apparently her kids are with her mm-hmm. ex-husband. And who can say what his intent was, but it sure seems like Jim tried to dissuade her from getting tested, because when he writes back, he reiterates this whole story about, oh, you know, she was only exposed on Wednesday night. She tested positive the very next day. And then he tells the esthetician, quote, I wouldn't get tested unless you feel the need based on getting symptoms.
Yeah, he's talking her out of it.
And this esthetician has had it. So she emails Jim back and much more politely. She's like, yeah, that's bullshit. And we all know it. And I've been told mm-hmm. by a doctor that there's no way you test positive less than 24 hours after exposure. Do you think Jim does anything in response to this? Like shutting down the spa or telling people to get tested?
No. No. It was, again, we're going on vibes here, and the vibes say stay open.
So a few days go by, and Sanctuary and Jim and Kay Boberson have done fuck all in response to this. Absolutely nothing. So Emily takes matters into her own hands. That email that Jim sent to all employees notifying them that the hairstylist had tested positive for COVID, my girl Emily smashes the reply all button. She says, "I sincerely hope that the employee is feeling okay and ends up with a very mild case. I can only speak for myself, but it makes me very uncomfortable to come back to work at the moment. I'm not sure how the risk of exposure to the remaining staff slash guests can be discounted. It doesn't feel safe to just assume that no one else could have been exposed. I truly hope that to be the case, but I'm not confident simply assuming. It concerns me for both the Sanctuary team as well as our guests. I've already talked to my doctor and will be getting tested tomorrow." So what do you think Jim does now?
Well, first of all, my thoughts are that's a very well-written email to smash reply all on. And Jim, like, threatens her job or something like that. Like, Jim goes nuclear with it.
Well, immediately, in the immediate moment, Jim doesn't do anything. And, like, okay, they have a whole bridal party come in to get their hair and makeup done with employees that evidently had been working with the COVID-positive employee.
Oh, God. Could you imagine your wedding?
So then Emily texts Jim, and by this point, she's gotten tested. And she says, "I just want to pass along what the testing center told me because I feel like it is very important information. If the employee tested positive on Thursday, their exposure would have taken place at least 3 days prior, possibly even more. I promise I am not trying to make waves. I just really think our guests and fellow employees should know they actually may have been exposed."
All fair points.
Now what does Jim do?
Jim does absolutely nothing again, and for sure doesn't tell anyone about the potential exposure, and he threatens Emily and tells her to shut up.
So he doesn't respond to her text message. But the same day that she texts Jim, Emily is also on the texties with her esthetician friend. And this esthetician is really worried because she has an elderly client who she is worried was exposed earlier that week. But I guess, like, the esthetician doesn't have access to the scheduling software. Mm-hmm. And Emily's like, "Well, girl, I'm the guest concierge. I have access to the scheduling software. Maybe we can figure this out. I'll just log into our scheduling app and check when that client was there and who was also working in the salon at the same time." Except her login doesn't work anymore.
Oh, no.
That afternoon, Jim emails Emily and copies his wife. Before you read this, I want to reiterate, we're in late July 2020.
This is like the beginning of what, the Delta surge too? Like there's, I think there was, yeah, I think it was. Okay. Anyway, reading. "Hi, Emily. This is in response to your email yesterday. I respect your opinion and the other concerns you shared with the entire staff. You should know that the actions on my end are being taken to follow up and continuously review every decision I make, so it is in the best interest of all employees and guests. Just because I say something doesn't mean I'm not doing work in the background. HIPAA is also a big concern of mine."
You just made a face.
Yeah, I did. Like, one, because it's HIPAA, like hippo, and not HIPAA, the actual acronym, which is usually a major red flag.
Yeah, that's always a sign. Yeah, that's always a sign that somebody's a real expert in HIPAA when they get the acronym wrong.
Yes. All right, continuing. COVID-19 is a very sensitive topic where concerns should be discussed one-on-one, especially as it relates to doing business during this very difficult time.
I'm going to interject here. Does it sound to you like Jim is maybe instructing Emily that she's not permitted to discuss her working conditions with her fellow employees?
He definitely is, which I clocked in the very first line where he says, "The way you shared this with the entire staff."
Yeah. He's like, "Thanks, bitch."
Yeah, exactly. "Stop riling up everybody, asshole." Okay. "Specifically, as it relates to the concerns in your email, here are the steps I have taken. It works out well that we have a new hire starting on Tuesday who will take your shifts this upcoming week. In addition, per your request concerns, I have changed the August schedule. As we approach mid-August, if you'd like, we can sit down one-on-one to discuss and review September based on how you feel at that time. And at that time, we can review any shift needs in September. Thank you, Jim." So basically he's taking her off the shift and not letting her work. He's like, well, if you're concerned, we're not going to let you work.
He's removed her from the schedule through September, apparently.
Yeah.
So that's about 6 weeks at this point. Like, you complain to the whole staff. Okay. You don't work for 6 weeks.
Yeah, exactly.
And Emily very rightly understands this as, because I hit reply all, you are taking all of my shifts away and you're effectively firing me. I mean, mm-hmm. like, among these employees, we probably cannot afford, especially after the turmoil earlier in the year, we probably cannot afford to simply be out of work. So that night, Emily emails Jim back to object to the fact that he took her off the schedule and emphasize, like, I only meant to share my concerns to make Sanctuary as safe as possible. And she emphasizes, like, I'm not refusing to work. I'm not quitting. I'm not abandoning my job. Can we please talk about the schedule changes? He doesn't respond.
Mm-hmm.
Over the next few days, her Sanctuary email address stops working, and Sanctuary took her photo off their website.
Oh my
which
gosh.
Which seems to me like a pretty clear indication that your ass has been fired.
Yeah.
Our friend Jim is also a petty king.
Of course he is.
Because she was an employee, Emily got employee discounts on appointments at the spa, and she had booked appointments through the end of 2020. She thought she had a hair appointment at the end of July, and she called the spa to cancel the appointment because she didn't have her test results back yet. Mm-hmm. And the person who answered the phone was like, cancel what? You don't have any appointments. And Emily's like, none? Like, what about the rest of the year? And the person on the phone is like, no, that you don't, I'm not showing anything for you for the rest of the year. So somebody went in and deleted all of her appointments. To give you even more flavor of who we're dealing with, according to the NLRB, in early August 2020, Sanctuary put up a flyer on the doors of its salons related to Wisconsin's mask mandate. And the flyer said, we wish to advise that Sanctuary Salon and Spa has taken the stance that it is not the responsibility of the owners or employees to enforce unconstitutional mask mandates from the governor. Therefore, guests do not have to wear face masks in order to enter either of our locations.
What are the odds that these owners have a don't tread on me flag somewhere in their house?
I was going to say, I guarantee you, this guy has an Under Armour shirt with the Punisher logo on it.
Yes.
He probably has a t-shirt that has like a picture of an AR on it. And it says like, sorry, I can't hear you over all of the freedom or something like that. Emily files her first charge with the National Labor Relations Board in mid-September 2020. Asserting that Jim and Sanctuary had violated her rights under the National Labor Relations Act, which we've talked about before. Do you want to say a little bit about that and how it would apply to like an employee in this context?
Yeah, we have talked a little bit about it before, but the big thing to take away from the National Labor Relations Act is that you may not think it applies to you, but it does. Basically, mm-hmm. it applies to, even if you don't have a union workforce, it applies to all employers who have like interstate commerce, which is basically all employers. And you cannot prohibit your employees, your non-supervisory employees, from discussing basically the terms and conditions of their jobs, of the workplace, of, you know, potentially collective bargaining, things like that, because that would be an infringement on their right to potentially create a collective bargaining unit. So all of your
Or just engage in concerted collective action. I mean, even if they're not going to form a union, to take any kind of action together related to the terms and conditions of their workplace. And I think you make a really good point, which is you do not have to be in a union to avail yourself of these protections.
Exactly. It's any non-supervisory employee basically nationwide. And, you know, the NLRB goes so far as to say, you know, liking someone's status on Facebook about your workplace could be protected concerted activity, that kind of stuff. So it's very sweeping, and there's a lot of traps for the unwary if you don't know what you're doing when you deal with it.
Yeah. And of course, in order to make this right effective, you can't retaliate against employees for engaging in their rights. So a few days after she files this first charge with the NLRB, Jim finally finds his email and emails her.
Amazing.
And says, it's actions like the one you just took that makes us as small business owners wonder if it's really worth it. I am disgusted by the action you have decided to take. And he says he hopes she feels good about it, but quote, I personally feel like you should be ashamed of yourself. And he closes the email by stating that he is, quote unquote, clocking my hours, which I don't know what that means, but it sounds like it's supposed to be like a threat or something.
I was about to say that feels threatening.
Yeah. I don't understand what the threat is, but it feels like it was meant as a threat.
Yes.
It just feels ominous.
He could have been a little more explicit, though. He could have been like, but for your protected activity, I would not have sent this threatening email.
I don't know the details, but Emily files a second NLRB charge in mid-October 2020. She also files an OSHA complaint against Sanctuary. The same day that she files her second NLRB charge, she's pretty certain OSHA notifies Jim of the OSHA complaint. In that same day, Jim emails Emily. Now, turns out Emily has a son who worked at the spa over like breaks and earlier in the summer. So here's Jim's email when he finds out about the second charge in the OSHA complaint. He says, everything is going really well so far in this case. Thank you for submitting it. It's teaching me more about why small businesses fail. It's so funny because he's obviously trying to be sarcastic. It's like, yes. Well, yeah, when you're a dipshit, your business is going to fail, Jim. That's right.
Yeah, that's it. When you treat your employees like shit, they leave and they do things like this.
Right. And then he says, in addition, I did want to ask if you knew anything about the events that occurred at the end of May. This involved something your son did with his phone camera on his last day of work. To me, it personally disgusted me, and the more I've thought about it, sexual harassment is the word for it. The lack of respect these kids have today, I guess they say, comes from their parents. That is why I am taking the time to tell you as his mother. I'm working on next steps as it relates to that, and I'm glad everything was documented. You should ask him about it, because you're probably going to want to know more when it surfaces soon. Or it may not, but that all depends.
Oh my gosh.
Neither Emily nor her son have any clue.
Of course not.
What he's talking about. And it's also like, hey, Jim, I have a question. Did you just put into email that you as the manager and business owner are aware of an incident of sexual harassment or at the very least inappropriate conduct by an employee at your spa, and you took no action and apparently may continue to take no action? Like, is that what we're putting in writing?
Yes. And we weren't going to take action until I realized that your son was somehow involved in protected activity. And now we may take action against him.
Right. Yeah. But maybe, you know, you drop the NLRB stuff and you drop the OSHA thing and like maybe you don't need to worry about your son. Pretty soon after that second NLRB charge, Sanctuary, and it's Jim who does this, emails the NLRB, Sanctuary's response to the allegations. And it doesn't make a lot of sense. It's basically like, well, Emily's just trying to financially damage my business and she's trying to get some sort of financial gain for herself, which is not really like a thing that happens with an NLRB charge. Like you might get back pay, but you're not, or you might be ordered to be reinstated or something like that. But like, you're not getting.
There's a massive damage pot of gold at the end of this rainbow.
Yeah. In early 2021, there's a hearing in front of an NLRB administrative law judge who very unshockingly finds that Sanctuary violated Emily's rights under the National Labor Relations Act. Like, you told Emily she could only talk to you one-on-one about COVID concerns in the workplace. You threatened her when she filed a charge. You threatened her son. You fired her after she emailed her coworkers. So the NLRB lays the smackdown. They're like, you're going to give Emily back pay. You are going to pay her for any adverse tax consequences she might have for this lump sum back pay award, because that's frequently an issue that employees like this have, where they get a lot of money all at once. It just like fucks up their taxes. Next, you are going to remove any reference in your files to her termination. You're going to notify Emily in writing that this has been done and that her termination will not be used against her in any way, which I take as like a clumsy way of just saying, like, if somebody calls you for a reference, you're not going to say shit about this.
Yeah, exactly.
You are also going to post a notice at your spas, both locations, for all of your employees to see. You are personally going to sign this and date this notice. You are going to email it to all of your employees, including former employees since July 2020. And when you post it at work, you are going to put it in a conspicuous place and you're going to keep it up for 60 days. I have seen a copy of this notice. It says, notice to employees posted by order of the National Labor Relations Board. And it goes through, federal law gives you the right to form, join, or assist a union, to choose representatives to bargain with us on your behalf, to act together with other employees for your benefit and protection, or to choose not to engage in any of these protected activities. And then it says, because they're speaking in the voice of the business owner, all caps, we will not impliedly tell you that you can only discuss safety concerns with management. We will not impliedly threaten you or your family with unspecified reprisals and actions because you participate in activities with the National Labor Relations Board. We will not fire you because of your protected concerted activities. We will, within 14 days of the date of this order, offer Emily full reinstatement to her former job, or if that job no longer exists, to a substantially equivalent position. We will compensate Emily for any loss of earnings. We will compensate Emily for the adverse tax consequences of receiving a back pay award. We will remove from our files any reference to her unlawful suspension and discharge. And there's a second page with a signature block for Sanctuary and contact information for the NLRB. It's like, here's the website, here's the email, here's... And then it also says the board's decision in this case with all little dirty details can be found at this URL. And there's a QR code.
They're like, we're going to make this so easy for you.
Yeah. You want to know all the tea about what a shithead your owner is and what he did to Emily? Like, open up your camera app. Here's the QR code, friend. And I was cackling when I saw that QR code. I was like, oh, technology, isn't it wonderful? So Jim and his wife and the salon just absolutely get their asses handed to them. There's something I haven't told you.
Okay.
Which is that the story I've told you so far is entirely Emily's version.
Mm-hmm.
And that is because in January 2021, a month before the hearing, Jim Boberson emailed the NLRB and he said he was walking away from responding to any further requests from the NLRB and that he will not be participating in the administrative hearing before the ALJ. And he says, I find it hard to believe that you can produce any evidence to support this case, and I will not subject the spa to further financial damages by proceeding with this hearing or wasting my time. And I'm confident that these charges will be dropped due to lack of evidence. I wanted to provide this update so that you don't waste any time on the hearing process because I will not be responding from this time going forward. And true to his word, the Bobersons evidently didn't respond to NLRB subpoenas. They don't even show up at the hearing.
That's not a thing that you get to do with, I mean, without repercussions.
I wouldn't describe it as smart strategy.
No, like that's like getting a, you know, grand jury subpoena or a subpoena to, you know, for a criminal thing and just being like, no, thank you.
No,
pass. And just not responding. Pass. No.
So the administrative law judge issues her decisions and the Bobersons, again, they just do nothing. They don't file exceptions. Mm-hmm. They don't object. So in August of 2021, the NLRB files an application with the Seventh Circuit to enter judgment enforcing this mm-hmm. order. And about a month later, the Seventh Circuit does, and it issues a judgment. And it says Sanctuary Spa and its officers and agents have to abide by the NLRB orders. Okay, cool. End of story, right? Like, we're done?
Absolutely not, because there's no way that they did any of the things that they were ordered to do.
So in December 2021, the NLRB pops back up in the Seventh Circuit and they file a petition for civil contempt. And they say, look, since you issued this judgment, we've emailed and we've sent physical copies of the judgment and the NLRB order to the Bobersons requesting that they comply. But to date, like, they have not notified Emily that they've removed any records referencing this unlawful suspension and discharge. They haven't notified her that those actions will not be used against her in any way. They for sure have not posted this notice or emailed it to anybody. So the NLRB asks for a show cause order and for the court to order the Bobersons to comply. And they want various fines per violation and future violations to encourage compliance and all that kind of stuff. The Seventh Circuit orders the sanctuary to respond in a few weeks. So you're the Bobbersons. We're now in front of the Seventh Circuit for contempt. What are we doing here?
Oh, we're ignoring it. Like, in for, as we said, in for a penny, out for a pound. I'm ignoring it.
For sure.
Mm-hmm.
They do nothing. They don't respond. We're getting
strong sovereign citizen vibes from the Bobbersons here.
And, you know, it's really funny you say that. Just like flag that for a moment. Just okay. Put a pin in that one.
They're like, my flag has tassels. So yeah.
In January 2023, the Seventh Circuit issues another order, and they're like, hey, you guys didn't respond to the first order, so like, we're super serious this time. You'd better respond by the end of January as to why we shouldn't find you in contempt for real this time. What are we doing?
Still nothing. Absolutely nothing.
Nothing. We don't get our contempt finding yet because in February 2023, the court issues another order, this one directed at the NLRB, where they're like, hey, our clerk has mailed a bunch of this stuff to the Bobbersons, but it keeps getting returned as undeliverable or unclaimed. So you need to tell us. They give the NLRB 24 hours to file an explanation of whether any sanctuary representative got the NLRB documents and the court's entry of judgment and the petition for contempt and the court's order and all that kind of stuff. The NLRB files that and is like, yeah. We sent everything to Sanctuary. We sent everything to their home address. And it's pretty obvious to us that Jim Bobberson or someone else has intentionally caused some of these documents to be returned to sender. And they include an exhibit, which is a UPS mailer that got sent back to the NLRB. And UPS added some extremely helpful information to the return to sender label, which I just sent you.
It says, return to shipper, reason for return, receiver did not want, refused delivery. And then it says, original receiver, Jim Bobberson.
Yeah.
So they're like, no, he was there and he emphatically said he does not want it.
Yes. So 4 days later, the Seventh Circuit issues its contempt order. And this comes, for those who care, it comes from Easterbrook, Hamilton, and Scudder. It's written by Scudder and it begins, all parties ignore court orders at their peril. And they say, all indications are that Mr. Bobberson is intentionally ignoring the NLRB and now our court. So they once again order Sanctuary to comply with the NLRB's order. They order Sanctuary to pay the NLRB's attorney's fees and costs and expenses, which the NLRB ultimately calculates at about like $9,500, mm-hmm. which is not insignificant for some not people who are running like costs. A haircut yeah. store. Yeah. yeah. Then they order Sanctuary to pay a fine of $1,000 plus $150 per day for every day of the next week that Sanctuary fails to comply. And beyond the next week, the fines will increase by $100 per day for each day that Sanctuary fails to comply. And they lay it out in the order. They're like, okay, for the first week, your daily fine is going to be $150 mm-hmm. per day. But on March 7th, that becomes a $250 fine. And on March 8th, that becomes a $350 fine. And as somebody who regularly gets her color done, that feels like you really better get to cutting some hair if you're going to stack up those kinds of fines.
Yeah, like that's a lot of color services per day that you're going to need to get that done.
But the Seventh Circuit also says like, hey, we'll forgive the fines if Sanctuary just files a sworn statement within 7 days of this order showing full compliance with the NLRB order in this order. Like you're still going to have to pay attorney's fees, but the rest of the fines, like we'll just let go.
Mm-hmm.
So what do we do for the Bobbersons here?
Oh, we're still ignoring it. Like they don't have authority over me, the Seventh Circuit.
Yeah, we evidently don't give a shit. We're not doing anything. Yeah. So in August 2023, the NLRB is back with another motion and they say, like, Sanctuary hasn't complied or even responded to the contempt order. The NLRB sent physical copies to Sanctuary and apparently the Bobbersons have two residential addresses. So they sent stuff to both those addresses. They emailed it. The physical copies were sometimes returned. Like one of the envelopes has a not a business handwritten on it.
Mm-hmm.
So then the NLRB gets a process server to try and serve the contempt order on Sanctuary. This process server tried 5 times to serve this contempt order. And the first time he goes to the main Sanctuary location and he speaks to a female hairstylist who's working there. And apparently it's like just this female hairstylist and a customer in the salon. And he says that she acted in a really strange and dismissive manner and was like, yeah, no, Jim Boberson, he doesn't work here and I don't know how to reach him. And no, there's not a manager available for you to talk to. And this process server is like, okay. He gets in his car and he looks up the Facebook profile of Kay Boberson. He's like, oh hey, that's the hairstylist.
Yes.
Yeah. Yeah. That was her. That was her. So like they're dodging service at this point. The same day, he goes to one of their houses. Nobody answers the door. He goes to the other house and he says in his affidavit, I rang the doorbell to the residence and a Caucasian male answered the door. I asked if Jim Boberson was home. He said, not right now. I asked if he knew how to get a hold of him. He said, no. He paused and was hesitant to respond. I asked if the name sounded familiar and he aggressively said no as he shut the door. I located a photo of Jim Boberson on Facebook. It appears to be the same male that answered the door. And in this Facebook picture, he's with Kay Boberson, who appears to be the same hairstylist.
This is not a very good process server, by the way.
Well, I mean, I'm like, what are you going to do? I mean, I guess you could like shove it into this guy's hands. Mm-hmm. And he's like, he says in his affidavit, I believe the male I just spoke with may be lying about his identity and is avoiding service of the documents.
Maybe.
The next day, he tries to go to one of the other salon locations. It's closed. The day after that, he goes to another salon location and he leaves the order with a receptionist. So like they've tried to dodge service. They've effectively been served at this point. The NLRB wants its money from the Bobersons. They're like, you owe us $9,500 in attorney's fees. You also like all these fines that started in March and it is now August, friends.
That's insane amount. Yes.
The NLRB does them a real solid. They're like, this is going to be financially catastrophic to you. So, quote, in order to shield Sanctuary from the full impact of its noncompliance, the board is looking for an order liquidating the fines that had accumulated as of March 25, 2023, which is 1 week after the process server left the contempt order with the receptionist. So that's about $24,000.
Oh, wow.
I mean, they get lucky. They also want to add Jim and Kay Boberson as respondents in contempt, because right now this has all been directed at Sanctuary, the business, but like businesses only operate through people. And it's pretty clear the Bobersons acted together to duck and dive service and refuse to comply with this order. So then they also ask for writs of body attachment, which is a fancy way of saying, look, you need to let the U.S. Marshals go out and arrest these fuckers. Mm-hmm. And they say there's no reason to believe that the Bobersons will take even a single step required by this court's orders, absent application of highly coercive measures. And they cite a whole bunch of cases that are all about arresting people when they fail to comply with civil court orders, which is like my personal catnip.
Yeah. This is how it first came across my radar, was just the writ of body attachment. And I was going to dive into it. And then you're like, don't read it. So I didn't. But
I was like, this is hilarious. So about a week later, the Seventh Circuit issues its order and they order the spa to pay almost $24,000 in fines plus the $9,500 in attorney's fees. And they issue a writ of attachment for Jim and Kay.
That's so wild.
Directing the U.S. Marshals for the Eastern District of Wisconsin to go find them, to seize them and keep them in the custody of the Attorney General of the United States until a United States district or magistrate judge certifies to this court that the Bobersons have caused themselves to fully comply or have committed to taking immediate steps to comply with this court's judgment in contempt adjudication, or certifies that the Bobersons have clearly demonstrated that they are unable to comply. To effectuate this order, the U.S. Marshal is authorized to use necessary and reasonable force in entering and searching the premises in which Jim and Kay Boberson may be found.
That's wild. Like, basically, they're like, here's an open-ended warrant. Go get them.
Yeah. So guess who shows up at the Boberson's house at 6:30 a.m. on September 12th, 2023?
The U.S. Marshals.
The U.S. Marshals, bitch. That same day, we get an order from a federal judge in the Eastern District of Wisconsin called Order Certifying that Defendants Have Committed to Taking Immediate Steps to Comply.
Amazing how quickly that happened.
Yeah, interesting. Interesting. Yeah. Once you get arrested, they're like, oh, shit. And apparently, Jim and Kay are in jail. They appear by counsel via video hearing on their arrest. And the NLRB is at this hearing, and they basically say, we've worked out an agreement where Kay and Jim have committed to posting the required notice in their stores and issuing this letter to Emily that it had removed references to her termination and to mailing out these notices to employees by the end of the week. Quote, the government also indicated it would be open to considering a payment plan for the outstanding fines and attorney's fees. Like, sorry you're a butthead, but you're still a butthead that owes us money.
I was about to say, we'll have very reasonable interest rates on this.
Yeah. Probably better than any bank. I mean.
Yes.
So based on this, the magistrate judge orders the Bobbersons to be released from custody. And that's the last on the dockets, both for the Eastern District of Wisconsin and for the Seventh Circuit. And this story did go national. And I saw it in a bunch of different news outlets because, I mean, it reminds me of that TikTok trend that's like, you have a smooth brain.
Yes.
No ridges or lumps or valley or bumps. All ideas slide right off like a water slide.
It is the ultimate in fucking around and finding out.
The local newspaper reached out to Jim for comment. He starts off by saying like, oh, well, we were actively working to rectify this claim by a past employee. Mm-hmm. And it's like, oh, really? And then he says that the NLRB knew that the Bobbersons had, quote unquote, promised to work towards complying with the court's orders before they were arrested. But there's no detail on that whatsoever.
Yeah.
So I sort of suspect what happened is they were like, please don't arrest us. We promise we'll comply. And then the NLRB and the U.S. Marshals were like, well, day late and dollar short, friendo. Like, you've got an order from the Seventh Circuit telling us to arrest you. So that's what's going to happen. Jim also has a few additional comments, which I am going to send to you in light of your comment about sovereign citizens.
Oh no. Here we go. What took place on September 12th, 2023 at our residence at 6:30 a.m. should have never taken place given the fact that the owner was in communication with the NLRB and promised to comply with all orders. The story has not been clear and truthful in other media and news outlets. Oh, here we go. Small businesses are the lifeblood of our economy and they are the backbone for our communities. Sounds like some people on Twitter we hate. Sadly, the NLRB's outdated standards have enabled the NLRB to project its authority on Sanctuary, its owners, and many other small businesses, which never should have been regulated by the federal government in the first place. Thank you for the continued support over the past 10 years to serving the local community. So he has strong opinions on Raich versus Gonzalez, is what I'm hearing, and he's really studied that, and Wicker versus Filburn. That must be what he means by that.
You're going to have to tell people what that means.
I know. That's basically those Supreme Court lawsuits basically are the ones that held that everything is interstate commerce, which gives the NLRB authority over it. It was a joke because clearly this guy is not thinking that deep about it. He's just pissed off that there's some government agency that he'd never heard of that has authority over him, and he's salty about it.
Well, like I said, we can be pretty sure that this guy has a large collection of Punisher apparel in his wardrobe.
Mm-hmm.
So that's it. I am going to continue to check the docket because there is a large part of me that hopes that they keep fucking around.
I wouldn't put it past them. My God.
Yeah. So I particularly enjoyed the story. And the reason I wanted to share it was, number one, because you really don't see the Seventh Circuit issuing arrest orders.
No.
And it just has such a satisfying conclusion in that these people were awful to their employees, risking their lives and fucking around and not taking their cleaning and sanitizing obligations seriously, evidently, and not providing a safe environment for their employees to work in. And they got popped, and they got popped in a big way.
Mm-hmm. And it's one of those things where sometimes it's the cost of doing business is compliance. And yeah, you may not like it, but you do have to follow court orders or else bad things happen to you. And it's very satisfying to see that end result when something does happen like this. Because how often do we see people violating court orders and there's no satisfying result to that? So it's very nice to see there actually be some karma at the end of this.
So ta-da, the end. I will let everybody know if they continue to mess around. But congratulations to Jim and Kay for having the distinction of having the Seventh Circuit issue an attachment for their arrest. Yeah.
Well, our next episode, I'm actually almost done with it, and it is all about dirty oil deeds done dirt cheap. So I cannot wait. It's another one where I have been giggling to myself the whole time I've been drafting the script because I can't wait for your reaction and I can't wait for you to read the things that I have for you to read. So it's going to be so much fun.
All right. Well, thank you everybody for coming back after a 2-week hiatus. You can find us on social media at Bad Lawyer Pod, and you can email us tips, comments, et cetera, badlawyerpod@gmail.com. And of course, link for the merch is in the bio.
Thanks, guys. We appreciate it. Don't forget to rate the show and leave a review.